The Universal Humanitarian Church appears to be everything a modern seeker could want, a progressive spiritual community blending the best elements of all religions under the charismatic leadership of Jonathan Papa J. Wass. But behind this appealing facade lies something monstrous. New recruits are systematically broken down through sleep deprivation, caloric restriction, and constant surveillance. Personal relationships outside the church are methodically destroyed and replaced with a new family structure. The manipulation is terrifyingly effective because it's so gradual, beginning with love bombing that creates a powerful sense of belonging, then alternating with brutal revelation sessions where members are publicly humiliated for fabricated failings. What makes this psychological warfare so insidious is how it targets not the weak-minded, but the idealistic. As one character explains, apathetic people don't join cults. It's the ones who want to make a difference, who are searching for meaning. This uncomfortable truth forces us to confront our own vulnerability. How many of us, under the right circumstances and with the right approach, might find ourselves surrendering our autonomy to a cause that promises purpose and belonging? Private investigators Cormoran Strike and Robin Ellicott face their most dangerous case yet when Sir Colin Edenser hires them to extract his autistic son Will from the UHC. Their professional partnership has evolved into deep friendship, complicated by unacknowledged romantic feelings, creating tension throughout their investigation. Strike battles multiple personal crises, his uncle's dementia, his ex-girlfriend Charlotte's suicide, and his growing feelings for Robin. Meanwhile, Robin's undercover mission at Chapman Farm becomes a harrowing test of resilience. Despite her competence, she finds herself unconsciously adopting UHC mannerisms, a disturbing sign of psychological pressure. Her ordeals, including confinement in a punishment box and near drowning in a ritual, push her to her physical and emotional limits. Their relationship provides a human counterpoint to the novel's darker themes. Strike hesitates to express his feelings for fear of damaging their friendship, while Robin's relationship with police officer Ryan Murphy adds further complications. We often find it easier to face physical danger than emotional vulnerability. The UHC employs layered manipulation techniques to create psychological dependency. Physical control comes first. Irregular sleep schedules, unpredictable meals, and constant supervision break down resistance. Members face 3 a.m. emergency devotionals, while food becomes a tool for reward and punishment. Language is weaponized to reshape reality. The church redefines family relationships with dehumanizing terms, flesh object instead of mother, past vessel instead of father. Members abandon birth names for church-approved alternatives, severing connections to their previous identities and creating an insider vocabulary that isolates them from outsiders. The exploitation of supernatural fear proves most insidious. The drowned prophet myth, supposedly Wace's vengeful daughter who punishes betrayers, maintains control through cultivated terror. Strike and Robin discover this founding myth conceals a shocking truth. Dayu was actually Alexander Graves' daughter, not Wace's. When Graves died in 1983, he left his fortune to Dayu through a trust. Shortly after a legal challenge demanding DNA testing, Dayu supposedly drowned. Strike deduces an elaborate hoax. A straw figure in Dayu's red coat was taken to the beach during a storm while the real child was relocated. Years later, she resurfaced as Becca Pierbright, the only spirit wife granted permanent virgin status, protecting her from scrutiny. Sexual exploitation becomes normalized through doctrine, with Wace's spirit-bonding teachings providing religious justification for systematic abuse through proximity training sessions that blur consent boundaries. One disturbing pattern within the UHC is victims transforming into perpetrators. Will Edenser embodies this moral ambiguity, Despite suffering starvation and solitary confinement, he later entered a relationship with an underage girl and enforced church discipline on others. Abigail Glover represents an even more disturbing case. After enduring severe childhood trauma within the church, she becomes one of its most dangerous defenders, methodically murdering those threatening to expose its secrets. As Strike notes, many people with terrible childhoods don't become murderers. Past abuse explains but doesn't excuse present crimes. The novel exposes institutional complicity, showing how power structures protect abusive systems. Local police dismiss complaints due to political connections. Celebrities like actress Nolie Seymour provide glamorous endorsements, attracting vulnerable recruits, while author Giles Harmon offers intellectual defenses, silencing critics. Medical professionals like Dr. Zhao create a dangerous fusion of spiritual and medical authority. This network of enablers shields the church, allowing abusive practices to continue while maintaining an appearance of respectability. The church's most disturbing aspects emerge from casual cruelty rather than dramatic violence. Children are tied to trees overnight for minor infractions, like speaking during meditation. Dissenters wear pig masks and crawl through the compound while others ignore them. A teenage mother is coerced into sexual relationships with senior members while her infant is held separately, emotional blackmail exemplifying their manipulation tactics. Jacob's case reveals this normalized brutality's depths. The dying child lies untreated in a musty attic, with caretakers merely praying over him while withholding medical treatment. Members pass his room daily, hearing his weakening cries but suppressing their natural instincts to help. This normalization shows how moral boundaries gradually erode. Members who join to fight social injustice find themselves participating in horrific abuses through incremental compromises until the unthinkable becomes routine. Perhaps most disturbing is the trafficking of superfluous babies, primarily boys. Children born from the church's encouraged, unprotected sex are separated from their mothers, often teenagers, and sold through illegal adoption schemes, with mothers told their babies are going to better homes, while the church profits thousands per child. How easily can good people be led to participate in evil when it's introduced gradually enough? The novel portrays the difficult path of cult survival recovery. Will Anderson slips into church chants during stress, his body remembering the prayers that once structured his life. Grocery shopping triggers episodes where he reverts to teachings about purity. Lynn struggles to process her trauma while protecting her infant from her psychological scars. Robin's recovery reveals immediate aftermath effects. Despite her brief undercover stint, she loses 12 pounds, has nightmares about the purification tank, and unconsciously uses church phrases. Her therapist explains how even short-term exposure to coercive control creates lasting trauma responses. Justice progresses methodically. Police raids uncover graves of failed initiates and financial records documenting exploitation. Evidence reveals systematic abuse, forced labor, illegal medical procedures, and money laundering. Yet some former members struggle to accept evidence against their leaders. Strike realizes that happiness is a choice that requires effort after learning Charlotte's suicide note blamed him. His response, "There's nothing deader than dead love," marks his liberation from her toxic influence and represents a shift in his understanding of love. This theme of choosing happiness despite trauma resonates throughout. Robin wrestles with her strained relationship with Murphy versus her feelings for Strike. Strike's confession to Robin about Charlotte represents his choice to risk vulnerability for potential happiness. The running grave offers hope that manipulation can be overcome while acknowledging the difficulty of that journey.